Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, December 1st, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, beach hazard in place for sneaker waves and tides forecast, Ukiah man arrested after attempting to hit someone with car and evading officers, and Academy of the Redwoods opens registration for the 2026-2027 school year. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Today, the National Weather Service put out a beach hazard warning for high risk of sneaker waves for the Northwest California coastline. This warning runs from 8 a.m. Monday through 8 a.m. Tuesday. Not unfamiliar to Humboldt or Mendocino County, sneaker waves are unexpected wave surges that travel up the beach higher than normal and often without warning. These waves can and have in the past swept unsuspecting beachgoers out into the ocean. KMUD News spoke with Jacob Boomsma, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Eureka, for more information about the beach hazard warning in place.
So we have a beach hazard statement out for this westerly swell that has filled in. So generally when we have these sneaker wave alerts out, we get these long period swells that fill in and not a lot of short period waves. So what that ends up being is you'll get pretty inconsistent wave groups at the beach. So you could have like a 20 to 30 minute period where you have pretty small waves, and which could be enough for those previous bigger waves to have, I guess, dried out on the sand. Or if you're just getting to the beach, you might not notice that there are some big waves. And then those big waves will come in, you know, breaking heights of 15 feet or more is what we're observing this afternoon. So you'll go from breaking waves of maybe like 2 to 5 feet to, you know, 15 feet or more in some sets. So that's our sneaker wave threat here. Really dangerous deep beaches and jetties.
Sneaker waves can often sweep people out to sea if they are not careful. In 2012, three family members drowned in Big Lagoon after their dog was swept out by a sneaker wave. That's just one of several incidents that have occurred in Humboldt alone. Boomsma elaborates further on the kind of hazard sneaker waves present.
Yeah, so because these waves kind of are inconsistent and can take a long time to kind of reveal themselves, so like if you are a beachgoer, you're just going to the beach, and those bigger waves kind of just happen, you may not realize that there's a threat there, and then you go closer to the water, closer and closer to the water, because the bigger waves just aren't coming in, and then, you know, 30 minutes later, you'll have a big set of maybe like 5 to 10 waves, and then that'll catch you off guard, and that could pull you into the ocean. Could be big enough to pull you into the ocean, pull a pet into the ocean. So that's really the risk there. If you're on a jetty as well, that's one of those really dangerous spots, because that could really catch you off guard there.
It's important to remember to never turn your back on the ocean when at the beach, period. The National Weather Service advises residents and visitors to use extra caution during this time when visiting the beach and to avoid climbing on rocks and jetties, as they pose a higher risk for slipping and getting swept out.
The one thing we really say is never turn your back on the ocean. If you are walking the ocean, walking the surf, you kind of can see what is happening, then you can feel a little bit more comfortable getting closer, or at least a little closer, but still stay much further back from where the waves are running up the water. Because you can get one of those unexpected big waves coming up. But a couple things as well. If you are at the beach with your dog, for example, and your dog does get pulled into the waves, we've had cases where people will go out to save the dog, like go into the water to save your dog, and the dog can usually swim back to safety. People have a hard time with that because the water is really cold right now, and once you're in the water, you get paralyzed or you have difficulty moving and swimming. So it's a lot more dangerous to people than it is for animals. So kind of goes against everything that you might be thinking, but if your pet gets into the water, your pet's probably going to be okay.
There is some potential for sneaker waves to persist after the beach hazard is through at 8 a.m. on Tuesday due to the swell periods being high.
Yeah, so even though the beach hazard statement expires Tuesday morning, we still have some risk going into Tuesday and Wednesday because those swell periods are still pretty high. Not as high of a risk as it is today, but that's going to combine with the higher tides as well. So if you're going to the beach during high tide, there might be some added risk there for some further run-ups of the waves.
Early December, we'll be seeing high astronomical tides as forecast by the National Weather Service, with minor coastal flooding near Humboldt Bay and along Del Norte and Mendocino Coast. The highest tides are expected in Humboldt Bay on Friday, December 5th, in the morning around 11 a.m. at 8.80 feet, and Arena Cove in Mendocino will be seeing its highest tides at 7.61 feet on Friday as well. Weak or southerly winds can elevate water levels above predicted tides, so be careful when driving near flooded areas along the coast. On November 29th, at approximately 6:30 p.m., deputies from the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office responded to a report of someone brandishing a firearm in Ukiah. The reporting person and victim reported that an unknown male, later identified as Eloy Lopez Jr., 26, had approached him and pointed a firearm at him, later attempting to strike the victim with his car when he tried to escape. KMUN News spoke to Quincy Cromer, a captain with the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office, for more information on the incident.
So it would have been on November 29th, which would have been Saturday night, right around 6:30 p.m., deputies with the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office were dispatched to the area of Lake Mendocino Drive and Highway 101 near Ukiah, California, for reported brandishing of a firearm. The reporting person and victim was a 38-year-old male from Ukiah, California, who stated an unknown male subject approached him and pointed a firearm at him. The victim then left that area in his vehicle, but was followed by the suspect, who intentionally used his vehicle to strike the victim's vehicle as the victim was trying to escape. So deputies and officers from the California Highway Patrol and Ukiah Police Department responded to that area. The victim was contacted and interviewed and provided additional investigative information to the deputies and other investigators. A CHP officer, during this response, located and attempted to stop the suspect vehicle, but it fled the area and eluded capture or contact by law enforcement. The CHP officers again located that involved vehicle at an apartment complex in the 1700 block of Tanya Lane in Ukiah, and then held that area and monitored the location while additional investigation occurred. We did issue a shelter-in-place NICSIL alert by the sheriff's office for the area of Tanya Lane as law enforcement investigated this incident and tried to determine what happened because there was a report of a firearm involved. So Eloy Lopez Jr., the first name is E-L-O-Y, exited an apartment on Tanya Lane and was detained while a search warrant for his apartment was obtained. The deputies ensured no one else was inside Lopez's apartment and continued to investigate this incident, which included taking additional statements from other involved subjects, processing the physical evidence related to this investigation, and searching Lopez's apartment under the search warrant. Based on the total of their investigation, deputies determined there was probable cause to arrest Lopez for assault with a deadly weapon other than a firearm, brandishing an imitation firearm, and possession of a controlled substance. Lopez was transported to the Mendocino County Jail, where he was being held in lieu of $30,000 bail. The Sheriff's Office would like to thank the California Highway Patrol and Ukiah Police Department for their assistance during this investigation.
This incident is still actively being investigated, and the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office requests anyone with information to contact their dispatch center at 707-463-4086 using option 1. Information can also be provided anonymously through their non-emergency tip line at 707-234-2100. In other news, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, a small 2.3 earthquake occurred near Hay Fork yesterday. The tremor struck at approximately 5:54 p.m. with its epicenter about 23 miles west-southwest of the town with a depth of 16 miles. If you feel an earthquake, you can report them through the USGS Felt Report form, which takes the information and creates maps showing what people experienced and potential damage. Today, Academy of the Redwoods announced registration opening for the 2026 to 2027 school year. Academy of the Redwoods is a middle college high school located on the College of the Redwoods campus. The curriculum blends high school and college coursework, allowing students to earn transferable college credits early. KMUN News spoke to Jenny Wozni, academic advisor and English teacher at Academy of the Redwoods, for more information about the school.
Academy of Redwoods is a public high school, part of the Fortuna Union High School District, but we're located on the College of the Redwoods campus, and we're what's called a middle early college high school, which means our students take both high school classes and then they're able to take dual enrollment classes, which everybody is able to do in high school now. It's sort of a common thing. But our program has been around for 20 years. We've been doing this for 20 years on the CR campus, which has allowed us the luxury of being able to have our students take classes always in person and on the campus along with other college students. So we have a rigorous high school program that prepares them for this. And then as they've earned their way into it, they're able to take dual enrollment college classes and often take up to 2 years of credit when they want to go on to school, if they want to go to a university or get a certificate.
Registration opened today, and the priority registration deadline is January 31st, 2026. On December 10th at 5:30 p.m., Academy of the Redwoods will host an information night at the College of the Redwoods Theater. At the event, families can learn more about their programs and registration information. The event will also have an informational presentation and live Q&A with students and staff. Wozni speaks more about information night.
It's just a chance, because we're different than a traditional high school. It's a chance for prospective families to come and check us out and ask us questions. We do a very brief presentation that is a video, and we tell them a little bit about the program. And then the majority of the evening is a panel of students and the staff there to answer any questions they have about what it would look like if they were to attend AR.
Paper copies of applications will be available at Information Night and can also be picked up from the Academy of the Redwoods office on CR's campus, and digital copies are available on their website, academyoftheredwoods.org.
AR is a school of choice, but we're still a public high school, and it's an amazing place, and everyone who comes here needs to be motivated, but doesn't necessarily have to be an incredibly academic student.
Once again, priority registration closes on January 31st, 2026. For more information, visit their website. In state news, California activist faces 4.5 years for taking 4 chickens. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
An animal rights activist convicted of removing 4 chickens from a Sonoma County slaughterhouse faces 4.5 years behind bars. 23-year-old Zoe Rosenberg's sentencing hearing is set for Wednesday in Santa Rosa. A jury convicted her on 1 felony count of conspiracy and 3 misdemeanors for the incident at Petaluma Poultry in 2023. Rosenberg says she wanted to get medical care for the chickens because the birds had infections and were covered in feces and wounds.
This rescue had come after years of reporting this company for criminal animal cruelty and seeing law enforcement take really no action.
In a statement, Petaluma Poultry alleged that Rosenberg and another activist, Raven Deerbrook, took photos and video, installed hidden cameras, attached GPS devices to company trailers, and left with the chickens. Both women are part of a group called Direct Action Everywhere. Deerbrook took a plea deal, while Rosenberg opted to go to trial. Rosenberg, who is a senior at UC Berkeley, says she was trying to draw attention to the plight of animals on factory farms.
The companies themselves are seen as the victims, and the chickens are seen as commodities. And the government should be protecting these chickens' safety, too, because their safety matters and their suffering is real.
Rosenberg says she plans to appeal her conviction and complains that her lawyers were not permitted to show the jury much of the evidence about conditions at the farms or slaughterhouse. The 4 chickens in the case survived and now live at an animal sanctuary. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Judge injunction blasts Trump cuts to university research funding as critics say universities capitulating to Trump. KPFA's Lauren Schmidt reports.
A federal court in San Francisco has ordered the Trump administration to stop using federal research dollars as leverage over the University of California system. In an 80-page ruling in AAUP v. Trump, U.S. District Court Judge Rita Lynn found that the administration engaged in a, quote, concerted campaign to purge certain viewpoints, close quote, from American universities, violating both the First and Tenth Amendment. Stephen Rosenbaum, a lecturer at UC Berkeley, is one of the plaintiffs.
Yes, I am a member of the American Federation of Teachers branch at UC Berkeley. I'm a lecturer at the law school, UC Berkeley School of Law. And In that capacity, I, along with a number of unions, filed suit, including the lead. The lead plaintiff was the American Association of University Professors, or AAUP, which is not a union, not a labor union, but it's a professional organization and has a lot of the same interests as the various union member plaintiffs.
The Trump administration's education task force sent a so-called agreement letter to UCLA that threatened to freeze hundreds of millions of dollars in federal research funds unless the university agreed to strict new rules governing hiring, discipline, protests, and curriculum. Measures critics described as political retribution for campus activism. The plaintiffs asked the court to block the federal government from enforcing or negotiating such terms, which they argue violate academic freedom and due process. Judge Lynn's injunction forbids the federal government from threatening UC's funding in order to coerce changes to curriculum, hiring, and admissions. It also bars federal agencies from seeking more than $1 billion in payments tied to civil rights investigations, a demand many UC staff have condemned as political extortion.
You need to pay us $1 billion. And on top of that, you need to do the following in terms of your curriculum, your recruitment practices, your protest free speech policies on campus, a whole host of things you need to do. You pay us the money and you agree to amend your procedures, then we won't take any further action against you. We won't withhold any more funding. And so really it was a form of coercion or extortion.
The University of California, with more than a 500,000 students, faculty, and staff, has been a top target of Trump's second-term crackdown on what the White House calls liberal indoctrination and campus anti-Semitism. The Justice Department conceded to Judge Lynn that federal agencies indeed bypassed the usual procedures for cutting research funds, and instead claimed it was relying on other authorities to halt the flow of money.
They can't do any of that unless they go through the proper procedures, which, as I say, was set up already under various federal codes, something that the administration has scrapped. The various office, there's an Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education. There's an Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Health and Human Services. And these were some of the first agencies that were gutted by DOGE. And this was a case where the feds just went right to the conclusion, extorted money and conditions, really tried to decimate the education system.
Judge Lynn cited dozens of declarations from UC faculty who said the pressure campaign had already chilled teaching and research. Many described avoiding topics seen as, quote, left or woke, to prevent triggering further funding threats. Lynn called those harms, quote, classic, predictable First Amendment injuries, close quote.
And create an atmosphere of coercion and terror, some would say, across the nation in terms of, or chilling, I should say, chilling what universities could and couldn't do in a whole range of areas. Judge said no, just no.
Her ruling blocks the government from tying UC funding to political viewpoint tests, including proposals to screen international students for so-called anti-Western or anti-American views, restrict curriculum or research that conflicts with the administration's ideology, or enforce definitions of sex and gender favored by the Trump administration. The order echoes, but goes far beyond, a similar ruling issued earlier this year in a Harvard case. Legal analysts say the injunction could upend ongoing settlement talks between the Trump administration and the UC system. But UC faculty are concerned that university leaders themselves are capitulating, noting that these lawsuits have been brought by unions and faculty groups, and not by the UC system itself.
Exactly. And that's why, as I say, it was the various unions that stepped up to do this. The university should have taken its own action, and it's been equivocal. It's not caved to the extent that some other universities across the nation have, but it was equivocating. It wasn't firm enough. And by bringing this suit, it was sending a message not just to Trump and his cronies and his sycophants who run the federal agencies, but it's a message to the UC administration and Board of Regents as well, to say, we are not going to stand for this. So it's taking it in the hand, you know, putting it in the hands of faculty and staff, which also benefits the students, of course, to say, however the courts rule, you need to, you know, this is a message to you, UC. Just watch your step. We don't know how far we'll succeed in the courts. We've had some good success to date, but as I said earlier, it can be taken away. And so this is a message to you to, you know, stand strong. Do not bend the knee.
As of this broadcast, the White House has not issued a statement. The injunction remains in place while the case moves forward.
In national news, Pacific Seafood faces lawsuit for Columbia River pollution. Public News Service's Isabel Charlet reports.
Two Oregon nonprofits have announced they intend to sue Pacific Bioproducts, alleging over 3 years of repeated pollution violations at its Warrenton location on the mouth of the Columbia River. The facility is owned by Pacific Seafood and produces fish meal, shellfish, and fish oils used in pet food, livestock feed, and aquaculture. George Kimbrell is with the Center for Food Safety, one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit. He says the company's own data shows chlorine discharges reaching over 7,300 times the daily limit as recently as August.
Because the fish are kept in a very confined, unnatural way, they require lots of pesticides, fungicides, and other toxins to keep the fish free of disease. And then, of course, that goes right through the net pens or cages and right out into the environment surrounding the facility.
This will be the second lawsuit this year against Pacific Seafood following a July lawsuit by the Center for Food Safety and others over Clean Water Act violations at its Rainbow Trout, marketed as steelhead facilities on the Eastern Columbia River. That lawsuit is still in its early stages, and the latest suit will be filed in December. Kimbrell adds, along with pushing Pacific Seafoods to be in compliance with the Clean Water Act, he hopes the lawsuits will illuminate the harmful impacts that farmed fish have on wild fish populations and the communities that depend on them.
They market these fish as a quote-unquote green or sustainable seafood option in grocery stores, and they're not. So it's misleading to consumers.
The Center for Food Safety has been working to stop industrial aquaculture for about 15 years, says Kimbrell, and have had some success. The group has helped keep the industry out of federal waters off Oregon's coast. But he says the facilities along the Columbia are in state-owned water.
We have a choice to be made about the future of our oceans and whether we want to protect wild fish stocks, or if we're going to follow the lead of some other countries with developing this somewhat new industry.
Kimbrell explains one of the biggest risks of farming fish is that some fish inevitably escape the confines and can weaken wild populations by spreading diseases, competing for resources, and introducing harmful genetic changes through interbreeding. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. For several Southwest Alaska communities, it took one night of hurricane-force winds and floods to destroy what could take years to rebuild. How and where to begin is a question that a group of men from Kipnuk tackled at a construction workshop in Anchorage. They've been staying in the city since their village was evacuated after the October storm. But as KMBA's Rhonda McBride found out, this time, instead of disaster, it was an opportunity that came knocking.
The whack of a hammer. The buzz of the saw. Those are the sounds of hope.
3 3/8 larger and 3 3/8 smaller.
They just lost their homes. They lost everything.
Tiffany Cottle is the training coordinator for Alaska Works Partnership, which offered a one-week program on how to frame a house.
I do think that this is really helping them stay positive and stay hopeful. They've all been so grateful for this training.
And they're all volunteers, like Devin Mann.
This is the door, and this one's going to be the window.
Devin looks sharp in a brand new hoodie given to him after a military cargo plane airlifted him and almost his entire community to Anchorage. He came with only the clothing he had on and feelings of trauma after a 5-mile ride in a floating house.
I thought something bad was going to happen to the house, like break apart. I thought that would be it for us, but I almost gave up. But I had hope. I had hope.
It is hope that keeps Devin going.
Everything we're learning in here and doing, it's going to be useful in the future for our village.
I mean, honestly, I can't stress it enough. Use your wrists.
William Andrew is impressed with his crew of trainees.
For what they went through, I'll be honest with you, their attitudes are awesome. They're wanting to learn. They've been great.
Andrew says 1 week of training in basic construction skills is not enough to learn how to rebuild a village, but it's a start.
I'm excited about their future, and I'm hoping that they get to rebuild it.
For now, there are hopes the training will lead to jobs and other opportunities. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
5 Native people are among 29 Bush Fellows to receive awards to develop leadership skills. In the 4th of 5 profiles, Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire reports on a tribal judge who wants to indigenize the bench.
Since childhood, Megan Troyer has been fascinated by the judicial system and concerned with making sure Native people receive fair and equitable treatment under the law. The daughter of a White Earth Ojibwe tribal judge and an Austrian Holocaust survivor, Troyer serves as chief judge for the Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe. She has very specific goals for her Bush Fellowship.
I'm going to cut my judicial caseload in half and take Ojibwe courses for the 2 years of the fellowship. And I'm really going to make focusing on the language my top priority and try to learn as much as I possibly can. And then part of my fellowship will be going around to Indigenous scholars, spiritual leaders, and mentors that have worked in the area of.
Ultimately, Troyer says she wants to bring humanity to the judicial system. Her late mother, Margaret Troyer, was the second Native American attorney in Minnesota and was appointed as a federal magistrate in 1982, making the elder Troyer the first female Native judge in the country. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Suzanne Potter, Lauren Schmidt, Isabel Charlet, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.